KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell, which you can hear at thetreatment at kcrw.com. My guest, Forest Whitaker, is in New York. After a career of amazing performances with directors such as Martin Scorsese and Neil Jordan, Forest is now getting acclaim for his work with a first-time dramatic director. He's starring as Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland, and it's an interesting performance for him. Forest, thanks for doing the show, first of all.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
I've got to ask you, if you could, to describe the movie a bit for the audience, people who haven't seen the picture yet.
Okay, this movie is about a Scottish doctor who recently graduated from college and decides that he wants to go off and explore the world to bring excitement in his life. And he decides to go to Uganda, where he meets the Ugandan president Idi Amin. By a fluke, he does something to help Idi Amin, who's injured, and then Idi Amin makes him his personal doctor, and he becomes his advisor. And it's about their relationship and about sort of this corruption of power that happens with this young man, and also with Idi Amin, and the sort of betrayals and the breakup of their relationship.
Now, you were telling me when I spoke to you earlier that you weren't entirely sure the director thought that you could play the volcanic ranges that demanded by this part.
Yeah, I think that was the concern was the size, the grandeur, and the sort of outward external behavior. And I think he was worried. I don't think it was about the internal life, other than possibly a question about the levels of anger that I might be able to display as an actor, and madness that happened in the latter part of the character's reign. So I think those were his initial concerns.
And how did you find a way to sort of play those rages? Like, I'm certainly sure that you've had a chance to be frustrated working with some of the directors you may have worked with. But where did you come up with it?
Yeah, life, man. I mean, you know, you sit still and you start to go inside of yourself and find these like little chambers and rooms that have your angers and your frustrations. And then it's like opening the door to oxygen, and those fires are already there, but only, you know, just these small little pilots, and they start to grow, and then you call upon the universe, or call upon the spirit of the man, hopefully, to step in and help you play the character. And then there's the other part, which is, as you start to do all this research, because I did so much research to just try to get these directions to point me in, you start to understand the paranoia. And then the paranoia, which people say, oh, well, he was frightened or he was afraid at times. There was reality, there's reasons for this, and you start to fill those things in, and then your paranoia turns into being cornered in a room, turns into being, you know, fear, turns into being the striking of survival, and then all of a sudden it just gets larger and larger and larger.
It's The Treatment, I guess, as Forest Whitaker. He's starring as Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland. I guess I'm curious, though, because you're playing somebody who was legendarily evil and playing an African dictator. Did you have concerns about playing a character like that because, you know, you're a black man playing this character who's known for having been a beast in a number of ways?
Well, my concern would be that he would be played not as a whole human being, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many people died under his reign, and there was a great brutality that happened during that reign, too. But I knew my journey would be to try to get inside of that. And when you get inside of it, then you start to recognize that here's a man who is not a Frankenstein figure, but who was constructed in a lot of ways by the West. You know, he was put in power by the West. He was rewarded as a soldier for his brutality against the Mau Maus and the Turkana massacres and stuff. He was groomed to become this, and then placed in a way into power by the Brits and by the Israelis and partly by the Americans. So then you start to see a different picture of where this brutality came from, because he didn't start out as a kid saying, I'm going to be president of Uganda. That was never his goal.
A big part of the performance is the way you use your arms and hands, which seemed kind of unusual to me. This is a guy who's really used to expressing himself. You play him
as if he really was a self-made king, which in fact he was. And I wonder where all that gesticulating came from for you. And was it in studying him, or was it the way you found to sort of make him make sense to you physically?
Both. I mean, I definitely spent a lot of time studying documentaries and interviews of Idi Amin. The Barbie Schroeder documentary was very – it had a lot of information because it had him in so many different situations.
And he's really scary in that too, and really funny. I mean, he really does go through the gamut in that documentary.
Which helped me out because I got to see him, you know, with his children, with his friends, in front of his cabinet, when he's afraid. But there's like certain gestures. As an actor, you start to just key into a couple of things because, like I say, you're trying to find the spirit. But you say, okay, when he points – like this, without his finger pointing straight ahead. In most cases, he moves his hands like this. He walks like this. His voice registers lower like this. Then you start to key these things in, and when you start to do these things and start to simulate them, they start to guide you towards the spirit of the guy. Because psychologically, it can't help but change you. It can't help but change you if you speak lower. There's a different strength that occurs with you. There's a different center. If you walk with your feet planted, it's different. If you point when you gesture, and all those things start to, like, as because we are spirit, you know, machines in a way, you know, they start to, like, dictate the behaviors of the character that you're starting to manifest, you know?
I guess I'm wondering this, too, because it seems that in the way you play him, he's also kind of wary in a way that he's slightly aware of the way people are regarding him, and it's almost like he's playing sometimes what he thinks people thinks he should be.
Mm. I mean, certainly, you know, that was the thing. I remember I talked to Jon Snow in London, and he probably interviewed him more than any other journalist. And the one thing is that Idi Amin was really savvy about the press, and it was important to him how he was perceived and if he could utilize the press to move himself forward in some way. Because he didn't have a great army. He wanted to have one. He didn't have a great Air Force. He didn't have all these things. What he did have was his voice and some of his choices. And as a result, he entered the international playing field because he would speak against, you know, London about their policies. He'd joke about the Queen and Nyerere over and all the others around him. And so that became a place of power for him, his perception and the things he said. And that showmanship is what partly gave him a place, a historical place.
It's the treatment, I guess, as far as Whitaker. We're talking about his performance in The Last King of Scotland, in which he plays Idi Amin. And playing somebody who's real and playing an mm-hmm. actual figure, what that does for you, because you've not done that a lot. And I wonder how you prepare yourself as an actor to do something like that. Somebody who people, even though they don't know him, a lot of people just know about him. They think they know him.
Mm. They think they know him because they have this image of him. And it's that mythic, awareness that people have of him that is the difficult thing for an actor to walk into, because it's not just playing the person in this case, it's also playing the energy that surrounded the person. And how do you do that? I first started keying into the language. That was important to me, trying to key into the accent, keying into Kiswahili and listening to the way he spoke. And then studying the history, not just of Idi Amin, but the history of the great leaders of Uganda and of that period in East Africa and the sort of triad that was forming there. And you just start building all these things, which in some ways maybe they seem like they're just touching different things. But when they start to come together, it starts to make you react to things inside the film in a different way. And then when you're in Uganda, not only am I doing this research and meeting with his relatives and his ministers and his generals, but I'm also trying to absorb the energy of this place and the culture itself, the food, the people, the way you deal with elders, going to these sometimes deeply spiritual sites to create the energy in myself to be able to project this larger-than-life figure.
But you play him so much that whenever he enters a room, he's basically got a series of entrances. I mean, the entire performance, in fact, is almost entrances, which must be incredibly exhausting to do.
You definitely have to stay on point and try to make sure that when you, because the thing is that I did play him as someone who like comes in and just in a way consumes the oxygen. He knows exactly where he stands, and you know, it's a key scene where when I hug Nicholas, and I say, Uganda embraces you. And it's a key to like his interested in him in the film in a way, because I believe this character that I was trying to, like, find does believe, in effect, that he is Uganda, you know? And that larger trying to maintain inside of this person that much energy is what he enters rooms with, you know, and what in the way he dealt with the world. And do you ever, you know, that documentary when he's talking even to the alligators, when he's going down Murchison Falls and he's going down the river?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, Jumbo Rafiki to the alligators. He's clapping his hand and he says, and the alligator does something. He says, see, he says hi to us, you know? And it's that kind of power, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out how to capture.
Well, it's funny too, because that thing that the documentary gets, I really noticed in the performance, is that sort of sense of him wanting to be regarded as both a king and a soldier simultaneously and trying to contain all these contradictions.
I think what's interesting is that the British, they thought that because he had been a soldier and he was always following orders, that that would continue. But what happened was they put him in a position where he's the father. And this is a patriarchal system, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the father is so powerful inside the family unit. So when he becomes the father, as he says, I'm the father of this nation, then he's making the decisions. I think they underestimated his cultural background and his need to try to do the right thing as a father. Even though it ended up making him do some horrific things, that was a gigantic misstep.
At some point, though, you've got to like take all this information that you've accrued and make him your own. When do you feel that, that finally happened for you? At what point in the performance do you think that you made, you sort of captured him, embraced him yourself, as a matter of fact?
I think that I could feel the energy of him, you know, when I started working. But I felt that he kept growing as the film went along. Because, like you just said, Elvis, it's like all these things are kind of like tools and things, and all of a sudden it's like to bring you to really the center of the core. Because in the end, the character exists not just in my imagination, but in the my inside. And so some of the biggest work I did, honestly, is like my internal and meditative work to bring the energy of the character out. That is where the energy of that character, as you say, that entered the room came from, was from that deep internal work that like spawned itself externally outward when I walked into rooms and played the character. And that's the truth of the character. He spawned from that.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Forest Whitaker. He's starring as dictator Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland. As a director, having done movies like Strap, which, as I've told you, I think is a remarkable film and a
Thank
great
you.
First-time film, mm-hmm. and it's really a character piece that contains a lot of the same kinds of things you're talking about or that I think The Last King of Scotland deals with, which is basically trying to find one's place in the world. And finding one's place in the world as a black man, that sense of paranoia that we're talking about for this film, I think, is a really pervasive force in Strapped, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, as a young kid, that's why, because originally when they gave me that, it was about the police officer, and I asked him if I could redevelop the script and make it be about these kids. And I think this one character that we follow, in one way, he's heroic because he's trying to take care of his pregnant girlfriend. And he's trying to do it in the side of a system where he feels powerless. And the only way for him to feel like he's acquired any power is to step outside of the law, step outside of the rules to gain some power.
His sort of rise, and that basically it's what you say, it's one of the, what we euphemistically call the urban films of the mid-90s, following basically a kid's sort of progress in the gang, and just sort of watching his rise. As I was watching Last King of Scotland, I was just thinking this kid in a way could have grown up to be Idi Amin.
Oh, yeah, in the right circumstance. Like in this case, this kid becomes a king in his little neighborhood. In a larger scale, he would have still been a king if he had another opportunity to escalate into the bigger place where Idi Amin is. And if he was at a supermarket, working at a supermarket, he'd end up being the manager, the guy who runs everything, the guy who does everything. That's why these stories for me, like they start to take on, even Strap took on a mythic quality for me, because I think he does represent this prince who's trying to become king, who's not aided by the people around him.
We've got to take a break. My guest is Forest Whitaker, the majestic Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland. I'm Elvis Mitchell, a little bit less majestic. This is The Treatment. More to come.
Shake it, don't break it.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is Forest Whitaker. He plays Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland, but certainly in the last 10 years, he's as well known as a director as he is an actor. And Strapped and Waiting to Exhale, I think we could say these are movies. And I think the key for me in talking about Amin, because they're all about black people, trying to find one's power.
Yes, in a sense of self, and a strength in a sense of self. Like in Waiting to Exhale, the women, some of them had really damaged lives, damaged relationships. And ultimately the message of it was they were searching and searching, trying to be able to find a sense of their own power. And it's about empowerment of themselves and to feel good about who and what they are. And Strapped, you know, that character, Bokeem's character, found that strength by, like, sticking by his ideals. You know what I mean? By saying, no, I'm not going to rat, which is one of the biggest things that he could do anymore. I'm going to take the fall. My girlfriend's going to be okay. And with the women, some of them had to let go of their relationships in order to feel confident in themselves, by themselves. And others, like, found a relationship, like Loretta, and empowered herself in that way, you know. But they found their place where they felt good about themselves. In this case, Idi Amin was a soldier, basically, mainly, who found himself to be the present. Because here's the thing. This is interesting. When I went to one plantation, the Meta plantation where he was raised, the sugarcane plantation, I met with all these elders there, about seven or eight of them, and they were telling me about when Idi was a little kid, he was always a leader. When he was a little kid, they would go to him to decide between the other little kids. And then they took him away, like, and it was like this mythical story they were kind of telling me. They took him away because they thought he was really smart, and this guy was going to teach him. But then his brother took him because he thought he was a great boxer. And I was like, so in effect, he was always moving along the same line that we're talking about. You know what I mean? Trying to live in his destiny, trying to, like, live in his power. And in this case, his destiny was to be a king, a father. You know, a king in their own house. There was lines that I tried to even add in the script where some of them, you know, Kevin left, and some of them I would do. There's one scene in the movie where I'm looking at the building, the new apartment, you know, new complex that I'm building for the Organization of African Unity that Nicholas did. And in one of the improvs, I said to them, he said, well, they don't want you to do this. And I said, they come into my house. They're coming into my house and they're telling me what to do. They want to tell me how to eat. They want to tell me how to use the bathroom. They want to tell me how to... And, like, the Africans, like, the other men were like, oh, this is so real, this is so real. It's like, where'd this come from? You know what I mean? Because he's a king in his own house, in his house, in their home. When you go to their home, he's the king in his home. This is by his rules. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that was the quality that I think destiny-wise or archetypically that he had displayed, because he rose from nothing to be the chief of staff in the army, to be the general underneath the bote of the president anyway, from nothing.
I'm talking to Forest Whitaker. It's a treatment. He plays Idi Amin in the new film, The Last King of Scotland. I've always been fascinated by this thing with you, just because of your size, because of your presence yourself. What you often do as an actor is play against that. And you're playing somebody who is in a number of ways childlike, but what's key to him is maintaining his dignity.
Yeah. I mean, he was someone who pursued his passions. And that's, like, I guess in that way it's childlike, in the sense of like, he can exist solely and completely on one focus. Like a kid who'd, like, hurt his knee, and then he sees ice cream running by, and he jumps over and is like, oh, my God, they brought my ice cream, you know what I mean, in the middle of tears. And I guess that's why people reference that quality. But what's interesting for me in the movie is Nicholas says that. He says, you're a child.
We should say Nicholas is the doctor who Idi Amin sort of takes in and makes his, basically, his kind of aide de camp.
Exactly. James McAvoy's character. And it exists on two levels to me. It's like it exists on what we just talked about. But it exists on that sort of colonialist concept, too, which is like, you don't know what you're doing. You're just a child, and the decisions you make are all crazy. Well, in point of fact, a lot of horrible things happen, but then a lot of the decisions that he made in the Constitution that he changed and, like, the business structure of the country are still in effect and are some of the things that they point to as the things of their greatest pride. So in his childlike way, when he made decisions that I think were emotionally wrong and maybe politically wrong, I mean, clearly politically wrong, too, like when he kicked out the Asians, who many of whom were, like, second generation. But it changed the financial structure, because at the time they did control 80-90% of the economy of Uganda. And as a result, today, there's Ugandan businessmen. It doesn't take away from the pain that occurred from that. But what was interesting for me is I interviewed her, Mira Nair's husband, who's East Indian Ugandan, and who teaches at Makerere University there in Uganda. And his reference was like, it was one of the better things that happened for the people of Uganda. And so it was really startling for me to hear that from him. But the place was startling for me at many times because I would hear this deep contradictions that would go on, like of how they felt about Edie on one hand, of the brutality, on the other hand, about the positive things that it might have affected in their lives.
It's the treatment. My guest is Forrest Whitaker. We're talking about The Last King of Scotland, in which he plays Idi Amin. When you were starting out in the 80s, I mean, there was still, whenever somebody saw a large black man, there was like a, you talking about archetype and stereotype, there's a stereotypical kind of idea that went through people's minds. And we're talking about the mainstream audience, i.e. white people. And I think one of the things you always, there's always often a slyness. You talk about introspective, but a character's sort of lack of willingness or his withholding quality. And one of the things that I think you sort of use for yourself as an actor is a way to sort of challenge that perception of people of you because you were one size, that there was an inner life to those characters.
Yeah. I mean, I went into acting trying to like just, you know, grow and see if I could really do it well enough to continue it. And so an early part, I mean, I would make some choices that were questionable. But on a whole, I just was doing things that were interesting to me, that I thought would make me grow. I didn't have any family. I didn't have, you know, I didn't mind, like, living on somebody's couch if they would let me. You know what I mean? And so I started doing these uniquely different roles. Like Garlic in Good Morning Vietnam was written as a, it was a Jewish character. It was written, fashioned after the writer, Mitch Markowitz, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And but then I got a chance to step in there and, like, play it. And it's immediately African-American because it's me. And when Neil Jordan wanted somebody to do The Crying Game, I was afforded, like, because of like some ways of like my idealistic point of view, and also by like my own interest, you know what I mean, and of not having to like live a certain way at a certain time, you know. And then so as a result, I got to play interesting characters, or characters that I found interesting.
Well, characters you made interesting, because I think there's, even in the movie like Downtown, you sort of use that, your size and the way you sort of inhabit the screen to make Anthony Edwards come to you. And that's one of the things I've found, and just getting ready for this, looking at a lot of these things, is that thing you do, and I don't mean to sort of boil it down like this, but often where people are coming to you instead of you're like sort of like pouncing or using your size to sort of make a statement, use it to make a reverse statement, and people have to lean in and pay attention to you. And that's always been something fascinating about the way you work to me.
Many times, what was one of the biggest frustrations in my career for many years was trying to, like, take a character on the page that really was nothing and, like, turn him into a full, complete person of interest. And I did that for a long period of my career of, like, looking at a character and then seeing more of who he was and then bringing that to the screen. And I got to be known for that. Of course, in order to play a character that doesn't have a lot on the page, it doesn't have a lot necessarily of dialogue, you do have to develop a certain internal life. And part of it, that internal life, makes people wonder or reach to try to understand what's going on with that figure. That's that, as you say, come to me concept. I don't think that I consciously was thinking of withholding inside the scene. In fact, I'm trying to deeply engage, but then I think that effect may have happened. I understand what you mean, because I'm learning. I mean, my work is changing slightly right now.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, probably partly because of King, Last King, but so when I did The Shield, it started, you know, shifting and making more complicated.
I think there was complication in those characters, but I think it really was a way of just sort of playing people's perceptions of you, just looking at you, just and playing against those. And I thought it was a really sort of inventive way to deal with that, because people often thought of large black men as being kind of bellicose and demanding attention and that kind of thing. And by virtue of what you did and using that in so many different ways, and even the way you seem to direct actors and watching those scenes, it's kind of about watching sort of the perquisites of power. And one of the ways to sort of maintain power in a lot of ways is to sort of keep some things kind of secret or buried a little bit and make people work for that.
Sure. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Because I think in Waiting to Exhale, there's a lot of that, and things have to be revealed. And I just wondered if you think that helped you, the way you worked as an actor, to sort of get your cast to do those things.
Definitely. I mean, definitely I talk, you know, I try to talk to them about their internal point of view on what, you know, even particularly with the women, obviously, and with the men, because they, you know, and waiting to exhale. Because, you know, I remember talking to Michael, who was Angela Bassett's husband, who, you know, really got, you know, a lot of flack as a bad guy. And I'm like, I was saying to him, I said, look, man, you're not bad as you think. You know, your life is falling apart. You know, you're living a lie. You're helping her and you're helping yourself. And you know, the passion, the verve is gone. She's not involved. We do talk about those kinds of things that make those choices even stronger. When you're doing one thing and thinking another, it just makes things, you know, more alive. You know, like a phrase, like sometimes I'll look at a script and I'll, you know, because I look at my life, you know, because it's all about growth for me, but I'll say, you know, when a person says this, it really sets me off, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, like, sometimes in the script or the movie, I mean, I may have decided that this phrase right here is what my dad said over and over and over again. It drives me crazy. I can't stand it. Because it's when you, like, truly have a back history and you're, you know, and it's so present that, like, when this woman says this thing that seems like nothing, but it's all she's saying is, hand me, could you give me the coffee? All of a sudden, it's like, you know, every morning she says the same thing. And it's like, you give her the coffee and there's like this, as you say, withholding.
Sure.
Because you don't know what the character's thinking about. But certainly I am thinking about something. You start to like inhabit the moment as if they're memories of the character. You know, you start, like my assistant's, Daniel and Colin was my driver, and they brought me to the source of the Nile. And we were there, and we walked across the rocks, and they had been carrying this bag. And I remember thinking, why are these guys carrying this little bag? You know, like, and so we're out there, we're sitting on the rocks, and I'm sitting there. I love these guys, right? And all of a sudden, they open up, they pull out the bag, and they're like, here, this is for you. And it's like this shirt, right?
Right.
It was this African shirt, which is like this badge, in a way, of me, like, kind of passing something. I don't know. You know what I mean? Because I've been working so hard with them and on the character. And so in the movie, that's like a real memory for me. It's like, it was like almost like the first time I made General or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure.
It's like, you know what I mean? And I did it on the source of the Nile. I mean, I remember that moment when, you know what I mean? And it starts to, you know, where imagination and reality mix. You know what I mean? And that's interesting. Anyway, I got off topic. I will stop. I'm here.
No. I just have a phrase that may be a little frustrating for you here. We're out of time. I'm so sorry. Please, you have to come back and do the show again, if you will.
It was a pleasure, Elvis.
Thank you. My guest is Forrest Whitaker. He's amazing in the new movie, The Last King of Scotland. Our technical director and editor at KCRW is Bob Carlson. Paul Wuress helped us out at Argo Networks in Manhattan. Mary Bradley is a producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell, terrified of Forrest Whitaker. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.